And welcome to another edition of Calgary Puck Radio. My name is Grant Farrell with Darcy McGrath. Back after, what, about a year?
It might even be longer than a year, I think.
Might be longer than a year, which is completely on me, just to be clear about that. And here's the thing. Here's what I'm worried about. It's been about a year, and yet, as I was getting ready for the show, I feel like the things we're going to talk about tonight are the things we were talking about this time last year, and they're the things we were talking about this time 2 years ago. Is that fair?
I think it's very fair. First of all, I'm going to let you off the hook because there was that little thing called a lockout that probably played into this a little bit as well. So I think to blame the entire year on yourself when there was no hockey until January 20th might be a little bit much.
That's fair, although I don't think I would have been ready either way. New kid and, you know.
You had the out, you just missed it.
That's right. That's okay. I've never been good at taking that. One of the things that we've talked about on the show repeatedly is Joel McGinley, and it's back out there again this year. And obviously this year, probably with more urgency, he is a pending free agent. The team's going nowhere. His production's fallen this year. Two questions. Will they trade McGinley? Should they trade McGinley?
If you would have asked me prior to Sunday when that first Eric Francis article came out,
yeah,
I think I would have said I don't think so. I think they're being quiet about it because they're negotiating. But then I think Francis stumbled into a really good news story by phoning Don Meehan, and then rather than getting a very non-committal, off-the-record type answer, he got a, we're not talking at all, and I haven't been directed to either way by my client at this point. So that points to, again, the pondering a lot more than if it's a no-brainer that he wants to go coast-to-coast in one jersey. So I think he's obviously entertaining it, and there's no doubt about that now.
He's entertaining it, and Francis' interpretation was that the Flames are essentially on audition for McGinley. He's trying to decide whether or not that he wants to be a part of this club going forward. If that's true, frankly, what is there left to decide? Is the writing not on the wall with this team? As the time that we're recording this show, they are last place in the Western Conference. Now,
games in hand.
Games in hand, 4 points out. But regardless, even if you believe they have a chance because of the point differential, the bigger challenge is the number of teams you have to leapfrog and the fact that in a compressed schedule, those teams are all playing each other every night. There are teams going to pick up points every single night on the schedule. So even if you start to win games, everyone else is winning games or picking up points, overtime losses, shootouts, on and on and on and on and on. You are not going to go from 15th to 8th. And so what if you do? You face the Hawks?
Yeah, they get annihilated and then the whole thing's over again. So yeah, this year is very different. McGinley's playing better. Like, I know you talked about his point production, but he's playing a grittier, more responsible game than he's played in the last few seasons.
Yeah.
I like him as a player more this year. But, you know, one thing we've seen for, I go back 5 years, is a team that does not change. They're just not there. They haven't been there. And we all knew they weren't going to be there 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago. But consistently, we've heard from Flames management, and we've heard from Joel McGinley, a very similar line, which was, we believe.
Right.
So, was that always true? Or did the owners believe and McGinley walked out that line? Or does McGinley believe and the owners are supporting a franchise player? Like, I've always wondered, like, is this lip service? Or did they really believe this? And now, do they still believe this? Or is that changing?
Well, and I think that's the frustration that a lot of people are facing with this year is when the rest of the hockey world, the entire media, the fan base en masse, casual fans and hardcore fans alike, all look at the state of the franchise and say, how can you not see what's required here? And I think the frustration is that this will be the fourth year out of the playoffs. And I think the feeling is that you can't even start the clock to get back in until they at least commit to a proper process. In other words, it's 4 years now. Well, how long is it going to turn around from here? Is it about 3 years? 2 to 3 years at most. Now you're at seven. If you go through another trade deadline and offseason with this same sort of vicious cycle, well, now you're 5 years out, and you're another 3 or 4. Now you're 8 years, and on and on and on and on. Until they hit rock bottom, it feels like it's just a perpetual cycle of nothingness. It's hard, right? Like, I'm a pretty positive guy. You're a pretty positive guy. When we post on the board, often it's, I think we've both been accused at times of being a little homers out there because we try and find the positive spin on things. But it is tough right now. It is tough when you look at the state of the franchise and try to understand what it is that they see that the rest of us don't see when it comes to their plan.
Well, you know, right now the Edmonton Oilers are being just raked over the coals because they're not ready. So I think the idea that you don't trade every single veteran out of town and completely blast it to the ground, I'm good with that. So the fact that the Flames don't want to do that, I understand that.
Yeah.
However, and I think you were alluding to this, but to kind of put more of an emphasis on it, you got to look at every asset in your organization and its shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
Mika Kiprusoff, Jerome McGinley, Mike Camilleri, Jay Bouwmeester, these guys are not going to be around when things are good here again.
Yeah.
So the only thing they can really do, and this is where you get two lines of thought, one is they should be traded for assets that will be, or two, they should be kept to nurture the assets that are here to be developed. And that is a decision you got to make. And I understand that you don't want to blaze it to the ground because the Islanders have done that. It's never worked out. The Jackets have done that. It's never worked out. The Oilers have done that. Florida's done it in and out, never really pulled it off. There's franchises everywhere that has not gotten that done.
Right, but you pick a plan, then you execute the plan, and both things matter, right? So just because the Oilers are executing their plan in a very poor fashion doesn't mean that the plan itself was the wrong one. I agree with what you're saying. You can't trade off every good player you have. You can't.
But you can't hold them all. And the other thing you said that's also true is, like, if you think going into a season that you've missed three straight years and you finished ninth or tenth every one of them, like, what is your best case scenario? That these players that have not gotten it done are now going to get it done, and then you're going to finish, like you said, in eighth and get swept by the Blackhawks? And
right.
What have you accomplished?
Right. You just push that timeline out even more.
So, like, you got to be bold. You got to take some chances. You got to have a plan. You know your plan's not foolproof because asset management and hockey player development is not a science. It's a gut feel. It's luck. It's timing. There's a bunch of things that go into it. And the Flames are, it's almost like they're afraid to face an inevitability. And the irony of that is they're in a market that is probably the most sustained place to do a blow-up or
yeah.
a rebuild because, A, you're from Canada.
Yeah.
But, B, you're in corporate Calgary with so many season ticket holders that are held by corporations that are going to be sold out even if bodies aren't there.
Well, and I would argue also that, C, you have a fan base that is so desperate for any sort of injection of youth that you could literally bring back the Young Guns era and people would be happier because they are craving to see some change in approach. There's a fascinating case to be studied here. I mean, you could draw this up as a business case. It's got elements of groupthink and escalation of commitment and an organization that's heading full force into an iceberg that everyone else sees, and yet they seem to, no, we're going there. We're going right there, and we're not going to deviate, and it's the right plan. And if you dare speak otherwise, then it's at your own peril. It's bizarre. And again, I'm a pretty positive guy, but I really can't figure out what they see that I don't see.
I'm not positive at all when it comes to this. Because
yeah.
if you're a fan of a hockey team, you understand cycles. You understand that there was some good, didn't get as good as it could have got, and then things are going to get bad before they get good again. And we all get that. But even the understanding of highs and lows and riding out the valleys in order to get to new peaks, like, you can't have that here because
no.
they are refusing to go into the valley, which means that they're not on the peak or the valley. They're just going to be on the side of the mountain in some base camp for the rest of their lives.
So how much of it is based on their desire to have Jerome McGinley go out with the storybook ending? In other words, are they so desperate to get Iggy his cup that they will sacrifice long-term future in a desperate effort to try and squeak in and go on a magical run and point to the Kings of last year and say, you see, they did it. They did it. That's the proof. We can do it too because they did. Ignoring the fact that team was far more talented than their eighth place finish ever showed.
And the Kings missed the playoffs for 5 years and
exactly.
rebuilt and drafted high and did all the things that you need to do.
But how much of it is based on their desperation to try and get a cup in a Calgary Flame uniform? If he wasn't here, then would the organization find... Because I've made the point that if the worst-case scenario plays out, which is they don't trade Jerome, he hits free agency, and he walks for nothing, that's still not the worst-case scenario. Because when he moves on, the organization moves on.
Right.
So
yeah,
the worst-case scenario for me is they don't trade him, they sign him to a 3-year deal, at 6.5 per, and we're still here a year from now talking about Jerome Iginla and the Calgary Flames. That, to me, is the worst-case scenario. If he walks at the end of the season for nothing, but this franchise finally mentally moves on, then I think it's actually better.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, I've said this, I think, on this show with you before, is I think this organization is a victim of the magic of that 2004 thing, and they've been paying for it ever since.
Yeah.
Because they want that back so bad that they don't want to move further away from it because it was so encapsulating, right?
Yeah.
And you can't get that back the way this roster is right now.
No.
The thing that I always look at, I've mentioned this on the site a few times, is last year, 4 days before the trade deadline, and the Flames played, I think it was the Phoenix Coyotes, in some listless game.
Yeah.
And Jay Feaster went on...
Intermission.
On an intermission, yeah. and he was, heads are going to roll. If these guys think that they're going to be here come Monday at 5 p.m. the way they're playing, they're sadly mistaken. We need change. This isn't acceptable. And then somehow, within 48 hours, he took it all back.
Yeah.
He said, you know, oh, no, I wasn't saying I was definitely... And somebody, in my mind, got to him.
Yeah.
So, was it the ownership group? Was it Ken King? I'm guessing it was the ownership group.
Sure.
And when you think of Calgary owners right now, who's the poster boy?
Murray Edwards.
And when you hear Murray Edwards stories in Calgary, in the oil and gas circles, you hear about overlording, micromanaging... hiring people than not letting them do their jobs.
Well, and we also know that Murray Edwards and Jerome Iginla have a close relationship, a closer relationship than what is normal for player owners. So there's that, too. So again, maybe this is about Murray Edwards trying to get Jerome his cup. I don't know. I have a hard time coming down on the owners in Calgary because, in many ways, they're great owners.
Well, they are for what they do, and they look after...
But it's a funny thing, right?
In the world, but
it's the George Steinbrenner problem, right? The paradox that was George Steinbrenner. He went from being the worst owner in the world, firing
Billy Martin
a dozen times, meddling, getting in the way, getting suspended from baseball, to becoming the best owner in the world because he bought his fans championship after championship after championship. When you have guys like that on top, it can be wonderful. When it's working, it's fantastic.
When I don't doubt that anyone in that ownership suite isn't doing what they think is the best.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any bad intentions. Like, it's not like Murray Edwards or owner X, Y, and Z got together and said, you know what, we could screw this franchise for the better part of 10 years if we do the following. Like, that's not what's going on.
But, yeah.
So some pretty smart people that have made a lot of money in other careers have gotten together. And then you mentioned the word groupthink.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of sentimentality with 2004. I think Iginla, face of the franchise. There's a lot of emotional stuff at play. And maybe when you get yourself far enough down, it's almost like a couple in a terrible marriage that has gone on so long that they've decided that it's too late to end it.
Yeah.
They just might as well just live with it.
Yeah.
And it's nasty. Like, here they are, and they're stuck. And they're going further and further down the same road, and everybody else can see it.
Yeah.
Guys on Sportsnet, guys on TSN. Did you see the CBC panel after that Saturday night game?
Oh, Lord.
Like, they were almost, like, shaking their heads in disgust at what is going on.
And there's some reasonable guys there. I don't have a lot of time for Glenn Healy.
No.
But Elliot Friedman is one of the sharp minds in the hockey media right now.
Yeah.
And his perspective on the Flames is fairly balanced. He's not putting highlights to the tune of... the Harlem Globetrotters. That's not his style. He's out there with a reasonable opinion, and it still is. What are they doing?
Yeah.
So let's get away from that, but let's go back to the question at hand, is what happens with Iginla this season? Give me a percent. What's the percentage that they actually do deal him before this year is up?
I've gone up to about 80 now.
Really? Interesting.
See, I looked at the record. I looked at the schedule from... that last homestand when they were heading out to Minnesota and Colorado.
Yeah.
I put the little spreadsheet on the site where guys had to go and fill in how they're going to do.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because even some of the biggest optimists on the site were all coming up with 3-4-1, 2-5-2. And I thought, okay, your game or 200-500, you go 2-5-2 in the next nine.
Yeah.
It's not over technically.
It's over.
But it's over.
It's
like,
over.
It really is.
And Francis had a good point on the radio today where he was talking about the fact that this is not a team that's in a lot of games. When they're losing by three goals.
Yeah.
So they're not close.
Well,
they're beating some bad teams.
The spirit of this team right now is such that they have a battle plan.
Yep.
And they come out and they take it to the opposition with a battle plan a lot of nights because they feel that they have it all together. The plan is this. We're going to go out and do this, this, and this, and this.
Yeah.
And it works on the first four or five shifts. And the other team's flat-footed, thinking, okay, well, we're playing the Flames. It shouldn't be that hard tonight.
Yeah.
Instead, this ball of fury comes out at them, and it doesn't go well. But the other teams make an adjustment on the bench, be it a timeout, a TV timeout, or an intermission, whenever it happens. Then the other team comes out and runs roughshod over the Flames.
Yeah.
And whatever gains were made in the first 15 or 20 minutes are erased. And then when it's the Flames' turn to have a TV timeout or an intermission and discuss it and tweak themselves,
yeah,
they don't have that. They don't have a pushback. They have no answer.
So you have it at 80%. Who do you see being the likely destinations, and what kind of return should one expect?
I think Boston and Pittsburgh are the two that I think are the most obvious. Hopefully they can play off each other a little bit. Boston I like the best from a Flame standpoint because they got the cap space that they can take the player without giving some crap asset back. So I like that.
Sure, I get that. I'll tell you what I don't like about Boston is I don't see a lot of quality players there in terms of youth coming back. I see some guys that actually worry me in terms of the organization trading Jerome for a guy in the 25 to 28 year range instead of a package of true youth in terms of high picks and prospects. The prospects that the Boston Bruins do have, they're not trading. They're not trading Dougie Hamilton. They're not trading any of the real good players. And after that, there's a steep drop-off. So I don't like the pieces coming back there.
Yeah.
Do you trade Jerome Iginla for David Krejci? I mean, he's a good player, but he's not going to solve this organization's woes.
It's not what Boston wants either, because they want Krejci for their own run. No. So
I see a better fit in terms of players.
I could see Horton, but he's UFA.
Yeah, so that doesn't solve much. I see a better fit on the Pittsburgh side in terms of what they have to offer.
Well, they got all those D prospects, right? So that's a natural spot. And I think if you take a third-line guy or a second-line winger that is decent, and you take the first-round pick...
And the prospect,
I think that's going to be the...
Here's the package. I'm going to put this out there because if I end up being right, it'll be awesome.
Okay.
And if I'm wrong, no one will remember. The package would be Tyler Kennedy, the first... And Brian Dumoulin.
Yeah, and Kennedy's exactly the kind of player I was suggesting, right? So, I think that makes sense. And then Pittsburgh's going to finish in the top seven teams.
Yeah.
So you're getting the 24th overall pick, but who cares? You're getting something for Iginla. We're going to probably draft in the top seven. So you get the top seven, the bottom seven. You can use that Pittsburgh pick to move up or move down. There's lots of things you can do.
And you're not going to, years from now, you'll look back at that and you'll probably say, boy, the Flames sure didn't get an impact player, a franchise-changing player when they traded Jerome Iginla. Too late for that.
Yeah, that was 2 or 3 years ago.
Exactly. So you take what you can get, you add some organizational depth, you add some youth. So I agree, Pittsburgh, Boston, Philly out there, if they can get back in the race.
Philly I like as a splash move because they are having such a disappointing season. They need to shake something up badly.
If they get close enough where they think they can get in and they can be this year's L.A., which it kind of feels like that kind of team, right? They've got way more talent on paper to be where they are in the standings. So if they can squeak in at 8 or 7, then you can look at that. Okay, can they beat Pittsburgh? I mean, first-round matchup, Pittsburgh-Philly? Dear God. Awesome.
No kidding.
So let's get away from Iginla. Who else do you think is possibly on their way out before the year? Because it's over. I mean, I think you and I don't think we... I do want to talk about the current team here a little bit, but... And some of the nice stories of this season. But it's over. They will miss the playoffs. It is going to happen. And if the organization clues into it, then maybe we see some movement here. What are the other names that you see as fetching some value or even fetching a little bit? Who's going out the door before the year is up?
Well, the first way I'd answer that is I think people can be really guilty of overvaluing the team you follow as players. And I think there can be a real danger in that. But I honestly think sometimes in Calgary, we can be victim of undervaluing our own players.
I agree.
And because of that, I had a cousin from Saskatchewan come in a couple weekends ago. He's been a Boston Bruins fan forever. And he was talking about what he would trade for Iginla, and it blew my mind. So, when you start hearing him say, Horton, our first-round pick, and he named some prospect, and he was just throwing around at pieces to get Iginla.
Yeah.
So, because of that, I look at guys that have had success, specifically playoff success. A guy like Mike Camilleri, I think, would have some value. His contract's a little bit large, but in a shortened season like this,
scoring again, producing.
He carried Montreal through two rounds of the playoffs
3 years
ago, so I think he would have some value. I think Jay Bouwmeester's stock is way up right now because of the first half he's had.
Well, and there's so much desperation out there for puck-moving defensemen and guys that can skate from the back end, and he fits those that bail. It's only got 1 year after this year on the contract. Yeah, so, you know, that contract that looked like an albatross, oh, you can't move Jay Bouwmeester. Now if a team believes that he's a big part of a potential cup run and they have to take him for another year, a year where he's still going to be good, and maybe they actually choose to re-sign him at the age of 30, overall, a lot of value there to be realized.
A lot of value. Kiprusoff, I'm a little less sure on now because, man, I heard him say something like the other day about how I signed a contract in Calgary to play in Calgary. So I think he sees Calgary as his only NHL stop now, and he's going to retire after
this. And you got to find a fit.
And he's not playing well.
No. And who needs a goalie out there among the contending teams?
Well, I was trying to think of a way you could take Brizgaev.
Oh, well.
Give up Kiprusoff, get a really good prospect and a really good pick out of it, and then we buy out Brizgaev, and then the Flames could move fast using their rich ownership group to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like when last time I saw this stat, the Flames ownership group is the second wealthiest group behind the Rangers in the NHL.
Yeah.
So
rich dudes.
And they got this buyout window.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to get really fancy with something like this, you could do a Brizgaev for Kiprusoff,
yeah,
and then buy him out in the summer and be done with him. Let him go free agent somewhere else.
Sure.
And sure, the guy would walk away with like $45, $55 million, whatever it would be. It'd be ridiculous. But if they're that committed to getting this team back to the postseason, that would be a good way to jumpstart.
Yeah. What about Alex Tanguy?
Tanguy would have some value, and I would do that because he's on a longer-term contract with his age, so I think that would make a lot of sense.
He's also a guy that I don't mind having sticking around, though. He's really changed in terms of being... I mean, he still has his flaws as a player, but he suddenly became a bit of a veteran. In the time between he left Calgary and came back, he matured as a guy.
The Montreal-Tampa experience, I think, changed him. I think he realized that he had it pretty good in Calgary, and he should have just listened to Keenan and done what he was told.
Yeah, so I don't mind having him here. You need to have some players you keep around, and he's one of those guys that I wouldn't mind. I would keep one of Camilleri or Tanguy.
You got to remember, you're going to have Hudler and Weidman on long-term contracts.
Yeah, Glenn Cross.
Glenn Cross and Giordano. My first chance to say that wrong. So there's four vets too, and you don't need eight.
No, that's a good point.
You know, like I look at them and think, well, maybe if you want to go a little more youthful, you've already got four 2D, two forwards.
Yeah.
Kiprusoff plays his final year and stays, then you got the goaltender, so that's five.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't want them all, and maybe you look at the value out there for what people are saying, and you make decisions that way.
Well, and that's the thing, is that I looked at this year as the perfect storm. If you're talking about ways to accelerate the rebuild process, I think this year presents that in a number of ways. For one, shortened schedule, more teams in it. Less teams out of it. More teams buying, less teams selling. Virtually no one selling out there. Florida's got nothing to sell. They're at the bottom. They've got nothing to sell. The Oilers have virtually nothing to sell, unless a team wants to take a chance on a guy like Hemsky or Horkoff, but they have very little to sell. The Flames have some pieces that seem attractive, and there's going to be very few teams out there that are actually selling things that are of value. So it's great from that standpoint, I think. Secondly, you're heading into a deep draft, and you're heading into a draft that at the top end has, I think, four guys that instantly can be the new face of the franchise heading forward. MacKinnon, Jones, Barkov, and Drouin. And you've got actually, I think, four or five guys after that group who are still pretty good that in most years would be in the top three of the draft. So you've got a lot of high-end talent at the top end where, you know, I think one of the things that's hurt the Oilers is when I look back at their drafts, when they stunk, when they had first overall for 3 years, none of those years have guys at the number one spot that scream, you know, franchise player. They're all good, all frontline players, but they're not getting, not even, I'm not talking Stamkos, Malkin, Ovechkin, Crosby.
Right. Yeah.
I'm talking about even that next level like a Patrick Kane. I don't see that at any of those kids. This year you have that. This year you have probably three guys that could reach that level.
Yeah.
So you can accelerate some of this by being smart.
I think so.
But
And doing it early enough that A, you're the first seller out there, so the value's up.
Yeah.
But B, because you're out there so quick, you actually jettison your season earlier and sink faster, further, and get one of the top two, three picks.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they do the normal plan and finish 11th and draft 12th overall, they've done it again. They've missed out on the blue chips again.
Yeah.
And this franchise has never had a top five pick.
No.
That's insane.
The only team. Right?
Yeah.
The only team. And the top, the highest picks we've ever had.
Six. And we've done
Rico
twice.
Fatta and Daniel Tkachuk.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And Corey Stillman, I think, was six, too.
Yeah, he was right there, too. You're right. Best of the group, actually. you know, when you look back, Stillman was a darn good pick, actually. Is Feaster the right guy for this? Is he the right guy to lead whatever happens next with this team? Is he the guy to lead it?
Well, I'm going to answer that by bringing in another question that was on the site today, which was the Ryan O'Reilly thing.
Well, let's get into that.
So I liked Feaster's summer. I think he did some really good things.
Mm-hmm.
I actually liked the team he built, given the fact there wasn't a whole lot we could do because we were stuck in kind of that gray zone. So he could add big guys that couldn't play, or he could add little guys that could play that weren't big.
Mm.
And he decided to get offensively gifted on the ice, and the team's way more exciting.
Yeah.
So they're a lot more fun to watch.
And individually, you can't disagree with any of the guys he's brought in.
Wyman's going to help Brody out a lot. I can already see that. I think Hudler's a fun player to add.
Yuri Hudler's a way better player than I ever thought.
But, yeah, big time.
And I don't know if that's because he came out of the Detroit system, or he's a smarter player, he's a tougher player, which isn't to say he's a tough player.
No.
But he plays a tougher game than I thought he did. He's a far more complete player than I thought he was. For me this year, he's been the biggest surprise. It's proof you don't really know guys until you watch them every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, exactly. The Ryan O'Reilly thing, that's exactly like, for a second, let's put NHL bylaws and waivers aside for a second and just say, you know, we've been critical of the fact that this franchise won't take a chance.
Yeah.
That was a definitely a quick way to get better. Now, is it an overpay and guys make it a little bit too much money? Potentially, but if he's the best second line center in hockey, he's going to make $5.5 million anyway. So it wouldn't be an overpayment necessarily. So the shrewdness and the striking when the iron is hot like that was an interesting play by Feaster. I don't blame him or the organization for missing that clause because it sounds like the NHL didn't know about it, the NHLPA didn't know about it, his agent didn't know about it. There's a lot of people who didn't know about it. I do blame the organization and whoever's responsible for that ridiculous press release that came out.
Right.
Because that's embarrassing. Because that is, we screwed up, and we don't want to admit we screwed up.
We're trying to fool everyone.
So now we're going to lie to our entire fan base about
yeah.
it. And it made it look like morons, to be honest with you. That was a humiliating game.
Well, I agree completely. I mean, my whole take on the Ryan O'Reilly thing, there's a couple angles to this. Was it the right move, regardless of what happened, and who should take the fall, or should someone take the fall for what almost happened, which, oh God, the thought that it could happen makes me actually want to be sick. Like, I just can't believe it.
I don't think it would have been allowed to happen.
No, so that's my take. I think everyone involved, from O'Reilly to his agent, who really screwed up by allowing him to play those games and basically took away all his leverage.
The Avalanche were not realizing they had the leverage.
The NHL themselves and the Flames, everyone involved is probably happy that, oh, glad that didn't go down like it could have gone down. Because that would have been ugly for everyone. Everyone would have had egg on their face.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think there's ever been a clear response from everyone, because I think everyone's response is, let's just hope
let this quietly go away,
because there's no good way of figuring it out now. And the fact that there's not a CBA actually in place and just the memorandum of understanding, whatever it is, that complicates it too. And I thought Ken Holland's comments on that were quite good. As the guy in Vancouver was racing to be a part of the dog pile...
That was actually pretty cheeky, eh?
Oh, what a twit.
Gillies.
So I think everyone was just glad that they didn't get into that mess. However, why didn't anyone call the NHL from the Flames? And that's the question that, for me, when I start to think, well, you know, the wording's a little vague. There's been some great posts on the site from some guys in law who have broken down some of the wording and say, well, here's where Feaster could be right. You know, some of the yeah. wording here is vague. Okay, I can get with that. What I can't get my head around is why no one called the NHL and said, is this okay? Unless they didn't know he played. If they didn't know he played over there, then it's shame on them still. But that's the part that you can't excuse, is that due diligence.
Wasn't there some other side story where he played in the KHL and there's a different name or something?
Yeah. Kudos to the guy from Sportsnet for finding it all, right?
Yeah,
that dude gets a raise. I know some people on the site have said it's been sloppy journalism and all that, but the fact that he took the time to try and figure out if he had played over there, dude,
yeah.
Nicely done. Here's my part, though, with the Ryan O'Reilly thing. I think even if it had gone through, and I know what you're saying about it's a bold move, it's a way to accelerate the rebuild, whatever you want to call it. I don't think he's that good to command... Not so much the salary, but giving up a potentially lottery pick in this draft. I think in the long run, you're going to get a better guy in the draft this year.
I agree.
Than Ryan O'Reilly is. But
Ryan O'Reilly on the Flames, a team that always seems to push into the 11th spot in the West anyway. I think you could argue that maybe with him on board, the Flames do push up to 10th, miss the playoffs, and then it's not a lottery pick. So I was okay with the 10th or 11th overall pick.
Right.
And then the 73rd overall pick. Because that makes a little more sense to me. But if it's third overall, disaster.
For me, it's anything from 3 to 7.
And before I even knew about the loophole and the chaos and all that, I was 30% excited about how bold it was and 70% really hoping the Avalanche matched.
I was hoping the Avalanche matched.
Yeah.
Flat out. That's
where I was too. I was like, oh, this has got backfire written all over it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, you know, the Feaster question, which I took a spinning, you know, reaming away from, is I don't know if we actually know what Feaster would do because I don't think he's being let alone to do his job.
So, is that not still his own fault? In other words, I know there's only 30 GM jobs in the NHL, but if you were up for one as an experienced GM with a cup, would not one of the requirements be, let me run the show? You know, I mean, every GM in the NHL consults with owners on big moves.
But how many owners that once again, we don't know.
We don't know, but you know what I'm saying, though. If he truly is a puppet.
If you're a meddling owner, you're generally not the person that sees himself as a meddling owner.
Right.
So when you're doing an interview with a GM candidate, you're not like, and I just want you to know up front that when you're ready to make decisions, we're going to get right up in your face.
Okay, but go a year ago, though. Go a year ago when he came out during the intermission and had his big rant, and then a day later, 48 hours later, came back and said, oh, you know.
Yeah.
So at that moment, if he didn't know to that point.
Well, he knew then.
He knew then.
But now he's got one of 30 jobs. He had an assumption coming out of Tampa Bay that he was never going to be a GM again. Because, frankly, when I looked around the National Hockey League at up-and-coming GMs or guys that have lost their jobs that deserve another chance, I wasn't screaming, Calgary's got to get that Feaster guy.
No.
Man, do we need that Feaster guy. No. It never came into my thought process. To me, he seemed like a once-and-out kind of guy. He's a lawyer.
Yeah.
He ran the Hershey Bears, gets an NHL job in kind of a weird, kooky Tampa situation.
He wins the Stanley Cup, but his record there is not great. Yeah,
so I never thought that he was the cream of the next promotion crop in the league anyway.
Well, and let's face it. If we're being brutally honest, we all have jobs, we all have mortgages, and we do things at our jobs that sometimes we kind of think,
ugh. You can sell out. Sure you can.
Everyone does it.
Yeah. And it's a pretty glamorous job to sell out.
Sure.
So I think it's very possible that Feaster's a little disappointed at the way things have gone. And like I like how he surrounded himself with some very strong, opinionated people. Like he's doing the exact opposite himself.
Yeah.
Like John Weisbrod is not a wallflower.
No.
And he brings in guys that could be successors, like Goulet. And like there's a lot of people that he's brought in that shows he's not afraid to lose his job to somebody that he's hired.
And there's been some positive signs in terms of player evaluation, talent evaluation, taking a shot on a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, bringing in some guys with more skill in spite of other flaws to the pro club, signing Roman Cervenka, which is, you know, sort of a hit-and-miss move right now. But
How about drafting Sven Barchi and signing him the next day?
Right. You know,
right?
So
not letting time go by. Just saying, you know, we believe in this kid. We're going to sign him. The Jankowski thing, I liked it. It was interesting. I don't know if it's going to work out or not. I think it probably will, but it's early and we don't know, but it was a bold, bold move.
Yeah. And what I like about what they're doing is they're putting a premium on hockey IQ. And I think all things being equal, when you think back to guys that bust, that have a lot of other skills, and you think back to guys that overcome shortages in some ways, literally shortages like Martin Saint-Louis, or can't skate well, or they have some sort of real identifiable deficiency in their game that they're able to overcome to become good players. It all comes down to hockey IQ. It's the great equalizer in hockey. If you don't have it, you're not going to be an impact player. If you do have it, you can get by some of those other things. So, you know, they go and they get a guy like Johnny Gaudreau who has that elite hockey sense, and you can see it. They find a guy like Sven Berge who's got that hockey sense too. And they prioritize that, and they pick guys on that basis. And whereas before, under the old regime, that didn't seem like it was the case, right? You look at guys like Greg Nemish, and you look at guys like, jeez, Matt Pellick, I mean, you could just go back. And that seems to be the thing they're all lacking, is that hockey IQ.
Michael Backlund was a Sutter pick.
Yeah.
So, you know, their last couple picks were definitely moving away from it. But, yeah, I know what you're saying. And I don't dislike Feaster, But I don't feel like I completely support the guy either.
No, I'm still on the fence as well. Let's get to some other questions that were posted on the board today, because there's some good ones. I like this one. From Soul of the Flame, is this the worst Flames Natural Center group ever? Last 20 years? This is one of the more bizarre things about this season, is the fact that the team basically said, ah, center schmenter. We'll move this guy here, Mike Camilleri, we'll try him, we'll try Alex Tanguay, we'll bring a guy over for Russia. Oh, he doesn't actually play center. Ah, that's okay. Nope, no worries. We'll have you get in, we'll take the draw. Like, that's been weird. But he says he can only think of one comparable, when Jeff Schantz and Andrew Capsules were the Flames' top two pivots. Sad. By the way, talked to a guy the other day whose kid is being coached by Jeff Schantz and says he's a fantastic guy. So Schantz still in town and apparently doing yeoman's
and
work.
He plays center. You should bring him in.
Probably better than...
How about Matt Stajan suddenly becoming a good hockey player again?
Yeah, interesting story there, too. I don't know if you read the article where he talked about his relationship with Brent Sutter and that whole dynamic last year, but I mean, interesting and good on him for sticking with it, and yeah, he's been good. Yeah.
Stajan and Bollmeister have been two of the better players.
Yeah.
And they're both whipping boys, right?
Yeah, now it's needless to say it's Blake Como. Oh, Lord.
See, the Blake Como thing, yeah, this is going to get people mad at me, but this website, year in, year out, there seems to be this group of fans that hate 6th and 7th defensemen.
Yeah.
And 11th, 12th, and 13th forwards.
Chris Clark.
Like, it's just every single five-year segment of Flames history, there's these guys that want everybody over the age of 29 that doesn't play in the top six forwards removed from the roster immediately and replaced with people that don't have a clue how to play in the National Hockey League yet. And it really annoys me, because Blake Como can skate like the wind.
Yeah.
He throws his body around. And he's one of those guys in your roster that if you get injuries, you can move him up the roster, and he's not bad.
Yeah.
Is he great? No. Do a lot of plays die in his stick when he tries to play with really skilled players? Yes. But he's a fourth-line player, and he's paid like a fourth-line player now.
Well, he's a little overpaid. I mean...
Isn't he 1.2?
It's a little much. For one, I have no idea how this guy scored 25 goals in the National Hockey League. I have none.
I do, for the same reason that Jokinen scored as many as he did in Florida, and Bollmeister scored as many as he did in Florida, and why Jake Garrison's been a nightmare in Vancouver, because when you play on poor teams, and Florida wasn't that poor last
Someone
year,
has to score.
You get beat 5-3 every game,
yeah.
But you start off down 4-1, and the game is over for the team that's already mopping up and thinking about playing Tampa the next night.
Yeah.
And then you creep back in with two meaningless goals that mean nothing, and somebody's got to score them.
Yeah. So, yeah, ignoring that for the moment, this is now the second straight coach that clearly has some trust in Blake Como. And I think often you go to more games than I do, but watching games on TV sometimes is the worst way to try and evaluate certain types of players. And a guy like Blake Como is one of them. He's doing things out there that for some reason he has now two coaches that have trusted him in certain situations and have liked him enough to play him consistently in that third and fourth line role. Do I fully understand it? I do not. But I also don't think ultimately Blake Como really matters one way or the other.
No.
Just like Chris Butler does not matter one way or the other.
No. He's just a... Butler's a 4-5 guy. That's what he is. When he's playing well, he moves up to the 4 slot. When he's playing poorly, he moves down to the 5 slot.
Mistake prone, but that's why he's a 5th guy.
That's why he's a 5th guy.
Hunting Whale wants to hear some talk about the future of goaltending. Does Irving still have a place? No. How does Rammel plan out? That's an easy one. I mean, it's too bad. I liked him, but no, he doesn't. And you move on. I mean, don't draft a goalie in the first ever again. Just don't.
No. For every brooder, there's 9 other examples.
It's just the development path is far too long. I mean, even when guys make it, look at Steve Mason. So
Craig Anderson.
Yeah.
Calgary draft pick.
Dwayne Wollison.
Yeah.
I mean,
it goes on and on.
And you can find goalies elsewhere. Now, some teams never find them. Tampa, Philly, they're always on searching for goalies. But then you have other teams like Anaheim that pluck guys out of Europe every third year.
Yeah.
They don't even need Jonas Hiller anymore because they got this new Victor Fast guy.
Yeah. It's
so
amazing.
You can find these guys. And the Flames may have a guy, and that's part of this. How does Rammel pan out? Is it worth signing Kipper to an extension? Why has it been so difficult over the years getting a reasonable backup?
The Rammel thing, it's been brawled about on the site forever because there's people that assume his stats in the KHL, meaning he's an elite superstar in the NHL when he comes over, and then there's guys that completely discount it. And the truth is neither is true, and you don't know. But the KHL isn't playing in the AHL.
Yeah.
It's a really good league. They had a lot of great players, and the guy has the best stats in that league. So does that translate necessarily into NHL success? You don't know that, but it's a good bet that he's not going to be too bad. So I think that's a good start.
Well, here's what I like about what the organization is doing with their goaltending. They're giving themselves a lot of bullets in the chamber, right? So you have a guy like Ramo. You gave up a second rounder and Holland for him, essentially. Or was it the other guy? Yeah. That was Holland, right?
Yeah.
I got Holland and the other kid that went back to junior this year mixed up.
I like the Gillies pick. It looks like he's having an amazing season. Gillies.
You've got Laurent Boissois. You've got a number of guys coming through the system
the
now.
Finn, Orsho.
Or, yeah, exactly. So
who's back playing in Finland and playing well again.
And they're all kind of in different spots in their development and their age.
And like you said, the development curve is so, A, long, and B, tough to gauge, that bullets in the chamber is a good way to go. Maybe Johnny Orsho figures it out the next three seasons, comes over, and he's ready to go.
And that's the window we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about needing a good number one in about 3 years, 4 years, when this team maybe is back to trying to contend again. Whether or not they have a good goalie next year, I don't care, because they're not going to be a good team next year.
No.
And I don't know if it's Kipper or who it is. As for the backup question, part of it's because the team sucks in front of the backup, and they have for the last number of years.
Although not this year.
No. You know, no, well, that, yeah, so this year they bring in all... And this year this team has had crappy goaltending from anyone who's been in the cage, for the most part.
Kipper's got an 867 save percent.
Yeah. Irving had one good game, and then had some bad games. McDonald's been about 50-50. I admire him for... The guy is a gamer.
Anybody that goes 500 in a Flames uniform in front of this team is playing well.
But his rebound control is atrocious.
Yeah. But then he's a 33-year-old career backup coming off back surgery.
Yeah. Like, Danny Taylor has a win. I mean, yeah. How they're doing it in front of these guys is I don't know. But prior to that, this team has really played poor in front of backups. I also think this team has been guilty of... They've assigned a budget to their goaltending, and that budget is 90% eaten up by the number one goalie. And so they allocate a very small budget to the backup position, and that's when you get Sauvé and whoever else the
parade. Well, they've gotten away with it, too, because until this season, Kiprasov was never hurt.
Right.
So and you could say 90% was a good way to go.
Flash Walken wanted to hear three unique reasons why Jay Feaster deserves to keep his job at this point in the season. I don't know if I have three. I just don't know if there's any point.
But he took over a team that was in a bad place. I don't know if he has to have three yet.
Yeah.
Once again, Feaster is not somebody that has to stay, but I do know that organizations that fire GMs and coaches every 3 years are a mess.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So if you're going to fire Feaster after a year and a half of having the job, then it's just another Mickey Mouse thing, right?
Well, so, make sure you can get a guy, you know, an improvement, whatever that means. Caramon LS, because how you say that, I've never known on the site. He's been on the site for, well, he's been since March 23. Why Todd Button still employed by the organization? It's kind of a weird question, but it's actually kind of funny, because I've often wondered that, how Todd Button survives one, two, three general managers?
Yeah, because his brother came in when he was already here. So it was Coates, Button, Sutter, Feaster.
And couple that with the fact that the draft record is atrocious. Now, maybe he had his hands tied for portions of that. I don't know. But the fact that he survived four general managers with a pretty stinky draft record right now, it actually is really weird. It's weird.
Yeah, but you almost wonder, he must interview well when they sit down with him and you hear his plans.
Well, I wonder in practice if his role has changed with Weisbrod here. Because it certainly seems like it's Weisbrod that puts his stamp on the draft. And makes a lot of the big decisions, whereas maybe in the past that was Todd Button. So maybe Todd Button has kept his title, but his duties have changed. I wonder that.
Or he was meddled with and he never was able to make his own picks. And maybe some of the other scouts on the staff supported that notion.
Maybe he had a file where he had his list where he could...
This is what I would have done.
This is what I would have done. Anyways, it's a valid question. Let's talk a bit about the team this year, because we haven't really done that. We talked about some of the additions. Dennis Weidman, Yuri Hudler, both impressive. What's your take on Roman Cervenka?
I think he's come on a little bit of late. This Anaheim-LA road trip, they've all pretty much stunk, so it's tough, but... He seems small and a little fragile in the corners, and a little unsure of himself on the ice. But
Well, and being hard on the puck or not so hard on the puck, right? So you see sometimes he comes down and tries to put a pass across and it just doesn't have enough mustard on it. But then you see other times where that raw ability shines through, his release. He tries things that we don't see Flames players try. So, you know, I really hope it works out because I think he does offer the type of skill that this team doesn't have. And it would be really nice to see that this club not even hit a home run on something like this, but hit a ground rule double and get a guy for free that they can have around for a few years because he's relatively young and add some skill. But
he's going to have to do it in the next 20 games because if he's sitting with a body of work similar to what he has in the first half after the second half, I don't know if they're going to know what to do with him.
No.
Right? Because I guess if they want to bring him back on a very similar contract, it only pays him $800,000 unless he does everything right.
And is he showing enough that another team will take a crack at him? You know?
Maybe.
That's, of course, the...
But and you hear guys like Jagr just go on and on about
it. Yeah.
Like this guy in an 80-game season will score 40 goals.
But there's all sorts of guys that do that. I mean, there's guys that are suited to certain leagues. There's guys that dominate the AHL and score at a point of game for years and years and years, and they get up here and they can't do it. And it's just the same with guys. Most of the guys that come over from Europe don't cut it, right? I mean, Jiří Dopita and Fabian Brunström, and you can go on and on and on. Guys like Damian Bruner are the real exceptions.
Yeah.
Even Ville Leino, who came over and played really well. Then now he's a disaster in Buffalo when he finally got paid. So I don't know, but it would be nice to see it work out. Beyond that, who's impressed? Trying to shed some positive light on this. Who actually has impressed you this season?
I thought Backlund was a lot of fun to watch until he got hurt.
Yeah, that was a shame.
He was seeing the ice so well. He was grittier, bigger in the corners than I remember him being.
Yeah.
I don't really know if the LA game when he came back there on Saturday night was much to watch him on, but I noticed their face-off percentages were better that night, too. So I like Backlund. I really like TJ Brody for that stretch, and then he kind of, him and Wyman flatlined at the same time.
Sure, but I mean, young players, the development curve is never smooth, right? It's going to be, over time it smooths out. That's what becoming an NHL player is all about, right? So
he's been a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
We've talked about Hudler, but I thought he was, I think you put it well, he doesn't play tough or big, but he's kind of like a rubber ball out there. Like he can take impact and control the puck and make good plays.
Well, and I like the fact he doesn't just give up the puck.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been a nice change for the team overall. A team that used to just dump, 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 and then chase now doesn't want to give up the puck every time.
Stajan's been really solid. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's not an all-star type player, but if he was making 1.5-ish a season, he could be a player here forever. He's a good hockey player.
And suddenly a bit of a fan favorite.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And Bollmeister's obvious. He's played great.
So what's changed with Bollmeister? Is it simply the fact that under Brent Sutter it wasn't the right fit?
I think it was use. I think they wanted Bollmeister to cover for players that weren't ready to play the role that they were in, mm-hmm. which in this case is Butler last year. Whereas this year they've played him with, even though Giordano hasn't been great this year, they played him with a guy that's kind of competent on his own so that Bollmeister can take a little more risks and play the way that he probably played in Florida.
And the goals that he's scoring and the way that he's setting up plays, it is how he played in Florida. It's not big point shots. He doesn't have a point shot.
No.
It's everything from the low slot. He races in. And I saw a bit of that in the last few years where he'd race in there and then no one would get him the puck and he would just turn back the other way. And eventually he stopped doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
But now they are getting him in the puck and he's playing fantastic and he's got those wheels. Again, another guy that's not, I don't know if he's turned into a fan favorite, but definitely the fans appreciate what he can do out there now.
He's a different player.
Yeah.
His timing's better. But I think also, like you put it well, I think some of the players that this team's restocked with that have a little more of an offensive flair to them mm-hmm. are seeing the late guy more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that probably wasn't happening in the previous seasons.
Let's talk about Sven Berchi. I've been huge on this guy, and I think if people go back and want to pull up some of my old posts, I'll look a bit dumb on it for what I thought he would do
his
rookie season.
He's going to be
fine. I know he's going to be fine. I expected a more of an impact in his rookie season.
Well, but he got hurt, right?
Like got hurt and...
They started healthy, and they had too many bodies. You can see that right now, and that's why he got sent down.
On the wing specifically. Obviously, they don't have anything in the middle.
One center and
they actually
nine wingers.
Fairly good depth on the wing.
So because of that, you start asking yourself, who are you going to push down the roster? And another guy we completely screwed up and not mentioning is Lee Stepniak's been really good this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an obvious one. But when you look at the...
And he's another guy, just to pause there for a second, he's another guy that I would keep around. He seems to play well with younger players. He's streaky as heck. But the interesting thing about Lee Stepniak is he's not streaky with his effort. No. When he stops scoring goals, it's not because he's not out there and he's not getting breakaways and point-blank chances. He just stops scoring for some reason. He's just one of those guys.
It dries up.
But in terms of having a guy out there that I think can be good for young players to play with, he's a guy that I would have no problem having him stick around.
However, if the Flames become sellers, his contract with this year and next year, so he's not a UFA, he's a good contract, he might have some value.
Yeah, especially if a team believes he can do what he did for Phoenix a few years ago, score.
Yeah, go score 11 goals in 13 games or something crazy.
Yeah, yeah. But we were talking about Sven.
I thought he started on a roster that was deep, so because of that, there was nowhere to put him. And you can blame the Flames and their hatred for youth and all that craziness you see on the site. But in my view, you start him there, let him get his NHL legs back, and then move him up the roster. Injuries are going to happen. They did. Then he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then when he came back, I thought he was kind of lost for two or three games, and then I thought he looked really good in Minnesota and Colorado on that two-game road trip. Mm-hmm. I thought he looked really, really good. And then that first game back against Vancouver, he looked pretty good. Then he had a stinker against San Jose.
That was it.
And that was it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to admit, watching that San Jose game, that he was giving away the puck left and right, getting pushed off the puck left and right. And so if he's losing his hands because he's panicking with the puck, then you shut him down.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what they did. So, and then you see that article in the Sun and Herald today. Like, how many quotes have you seen from professional athletes talking about how they're shot like that? Like, he was desperate.
Well, I mean, he's a really interesting guy. And that's why I think he's still going to be okay. And he's still going to be one of the faces of this franchise long. Because he's got a star quality to him. The way he talks to the media, the things he says, he's very honest. He's not cliched. And he's got huge expectations for himself. Massive. And maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe.
In the long term, it won't be. In the short term, I think it is.
Yeah. As part of the, I mean, right now, the knives are out for everyone. I mean, from Murray Edwards to Ken King, we haven't even talked about him, to the general manager, the coach, and even all the way right down to the farm, and Troy Ward, and a lot of talk about Troy Ward mismanaging the youth and taking the offense out of the games of Roman Horak and Max Reinhardt and Sven Berchi. And do you buy into that? Is there an organizational wide issue with gutting players from their offense? I mean, I'm putting the question out there because I know it's out there. But
even the question
itself, I feel a little silly asking it.
Yeah. Yes, they hate offense. No, it is what it is. I think young players that turn pro aren't ready to dominate the way they did in junior hockey. They're playing against large guys, and they've got to learn the game again.
Yeah.
Max Reinhardt, you can adrenaline push like Barchi did when he came up to Calgary last year. So, like, I think Reinhardt joined the AHL team and had a pretty good little playoff run for a few games. But then you come back the next season, you slog through a training camp, and you've got the travel, and you're doing all these things, and it can be an adjustment.
Yeah. Well, and I also think you have to realize that a lot of these guys coming out of junior that scored goals but were third, fourth, fifth round picks, seventh round picks, that's why.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Ryan House was a third round pick in spite of scoring buckets of goals in junior. He does one thing really well, and that's shoot the puck. He's got great hands. He does about five things really poorly, including apparently exercising.
Yeah.
So
diet.
It is what it is, right? Like, most of those guys don't make
it. But nobody wrecks a guy like Ryan House.
Well, and I guess my other point is,
he comes wrecked. You try to fix him.
Well, you try and fix him because the upside is there. Yeah. And if you take 10 of those guys, maybe one of them works out and you end up with a 40-goal guy out of nowhere. And it happens. Teams find these guys, and you got to take chances. I mean, the fan base is screaming for this organization to take skilled guys. Well, you take skilled guys in the later rounds, they are going to be flawed. They are going to have a ton of warts on them. And then from time to time, one of them will squeak through and become something. But most of them will not. And Ryan House probably will not. Brian Cameron did not.
Right.
Mitch Wall did not. On and on and on. That's why. Doesn't mean you stop taking them. And it doesn't mean that it's your fault as an organization. I mean, at some point, there has to be player accountability. And when I hear about a guy coming into camp, I don't mean to obliterate Ryan House. when I hear about a guy coming into camp 2 straight years out of shape, the first year I'll give you. The second year, no.
Yeah.
You're done. You're lucky you have a contract, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you move on. I don't know even where I was going with that now.
So you got there. You're saying it. You know, there's people get second chances when they have flaws, and you try to coach your way through it.
Yeah.
But when you look at a guy like Ryan House and you try to coach him, you don't coach him to be a better offensive player. You got to teach him about discipline. I mean, maybe you have to actually take him out of the roster and punish him because he's not living the life off the ice he needs to live. And then if he doesn't respond to that, it's not because War doesn't like offensive players. It's because this guy that's flawed when it comes to conditioning and commitment wouldn't listen to nice words and wouldn't listen to being disciplined.
Yeah.
Right? So then he's gone. But not because he was an offensive player and we can't stand having that.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, like you said, some of these players are flawed and you have to work your way through them and hope you can turn one piece of coal into diamond once in a while.
And I guess the frustration for Flames fans is there haven't been a lot of diamonds.
And we haven't had a top 5 pick, right? Like, you can draft a guy like Sven Barchi, 13th overall, and have him turn into a guy that should have probably gone in the top 6 or 7. That can happen.
Yeah.
But he's still not the first overall pick from that draft if you redraft that year. So if he's very small, and he has to get bigger.
If you look at Stanley Cup champions from the last decade, they all had top 5 picks that they then supplemented with really good late-round picks, late first-round picks, and the occasional home run from later rounds.
Yeah.
You look at the Kings. They had Doughty. They had Kopitar, who was around 10 and now would probably go top 3 in that draft. And then they've got a bunch of guys like Wayne Simmonds that they packaged off, and they've got Jonathan Quick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ring.
Home runs in the later rounds. And you need all of that to build a championship club, right?
Even the Flames lone championship was built the same way, right?
Yeah.
They had the Hokin Lubes, the Gary Suters, the Theron Fleurys, and the Sergei Makarovs were all taken in 7th through 11th round.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, you need to get the McInneses and the Vernons in the first couple rounds, Roberts, but you also need to get lucky. Joe Nudek was a second round pick.
Yeah.
So, like, you look at any team, and that's how they're built. You're 100% right.
Yeah. Just as we start to finish up, give me some reason for optimism. Long-term, short-term, I don't care. Give the fans out there a little something why they can believe that this is going to get better. Because this, in some ways, is probably worse than the seven-year out.
Once the team itself gets on the same page and faces what I think most have been facing for 3 years, there's so many advantages to this market that will then come into play. So you can be bad and be bad for 2 seasons and draft high a few times, but people are looking to come here still. Like, it's funny how they can get the Hoodlers and the Weidmans coming to Calgary when I wouldn't.
So, well, and you've got an ownership group who's willing to pay.
There's a big, big room for salary, paying to the cap. It's a good city to live in. It's becoming a very large kind of Americanized city. People want to come here. So once you get this thing turned around, knock down a few levels, you draft a little bit lower, you do better, it's going to be easier to supplement here than probably it has been in Edmonton. So you can turn, a little more of that Montreal Canadian turnaround, a little less of the Oiler Blue Jacket plan.
That's a great example of an organization that I think has accelerated their turnaround with some good drafting, some smart moves, bringing in the right guys, and you're right. It's a great example.
They turned it quick, and they didn't turn it quick just because Galchenyuk or his name came in. Some of these guys, like, you have to kind of look and see where they got them. Because I'm not even, like, Paxi Reddy. Like, where was he drafted?
Late first.
So you start looking at these guys that have all kind of emerged at the same time. And they're not household names for prospects.
P.K. Subban was late first. They bring even a guy from Europe like Rafael Diaz, right? Like, they're getting all the... Carey Price, though, top 5 pick, franchise goalie. One of the few high-end goalies that's worked out like that.
Even Gallagher wasn't a high pick, was he?
No. I think he might have even been second.
Yeah. So you just got to... You got to let players go to make spots to turn things around. And now I'm sounding like the guys on the site that want the youth, but I think that you got to start clearing some deadwood.
I don't think either of us are like full on just obliterate the thing, But I think everyone that looks at this team knows that it needs youth. And looking at the organization...
If you have the youth to come in,
yeah,
then yes. Not the youth for the sake of youth. So what they really need to do, though, is just be asset managers, right?
And not the same youth. And that's what the Oilers are doing wrong, right? Like they're...
Well, they've been unlucky as hell, too. Like, for them to be in the draft position they were for three straight years, yeah, and have the exact same kind of player come up every single time, kind of unfortunate.
Kind of unfortunate, but at some point they would have... I think they needed to say, we need to, even if we go off the board, to draft what we need instead of just the same... It's not even that they're all skilled forwards. It's the fact that most of them are the same type of skilled forwards. They all love to handle the puck.
Yeah.
They're all smallish.
And take it wide and play perimeter.
Yeah, I mean, watching the Oilers on a bad night for the Oilers when they're not playing well, you watch one of Hall, Yakupov, Eberle, or Hopkins take the puck and try to go through everybody, lose it, and the other team comes back. And you watch them take turns doing that,
yeah,
on their worst nights. When they're not doing that, they're reasonably effective, but they've got too many guys that want to do that. It's fun to play the what-if game, but, I mean, I thought they should have taken Sagan at the time.
Or Landeskog.
Or Landeskog. You know, I don't mind the Hopkins pick. I think the Hopkins pick is fine. I think the two picks they blew were the Hall pick. I didn't like Hall coming out of junior at the time. I thought he was far too reckless, overhandled the puck, didn't make his teammates better, didn't like him at the time, don't like him now. And Yakupov is the same thing. Don't like Yakupov, didn't like him before the draft, don't like him now.
Yeah.
It's a hot dog. I would have taken... If that draft was the worst case for them, because I also am not a big fan of Ryan Murray. I don't think you can take Ryan Murray first overall. He's not a first... He's Chris Phillips, right?
Yeah.
I think it was the perfect draft for them to drop down, even to 5-6, and you're going to get probably the same quality of player. So, you know, you don't do what they do, but I don't think the Flames would.
No. Well, it's a guessing game. I don't
know. So, anyways, good final thoughts for optimism. And we should finish up here. We will be back, I don't know, probably about a month. We'll do a show around trade deadline, probably.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And hope that there's something to talk about. Let there be something to talk about. Well, there'll be something to talk about if they don't do anything, but I don't want to talk about that.
You know, my hope is that we're rushing to fit a show in on March 26th because the Flames have beat the gun and got in a week early.
Love it. Let's plan for that. All right, thanks for listening to Calgary Puck Radio. For Darcy McGrath, my name is Grant Farhall. Talk to you soon.